Last week's episode of Roughing the Kicker was the most commented on episode in the show's history, with over 120 comments, and that leads me to believe something. Some of you guys disagree on Alex Smith. I don't know if you've looked into that at all, if you've realized there are a lot of differing opinions on the quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs, and this is Roughing the Kicker on Arrowhead Addict, arrowheadaddict.com. I'm your host, Joshua Briscoe. I'm going to have to talk about Alex Smith a little bit because I do really love responding to the comments that you guys bring. A lot of really good points with that. A lot of really great discussion about Sean Smith, the Chiefs corner. Certainly talk about him and his future with the Chiefs today as well. The first week of Chiefs OTAs has come and gone. We're going to look at all the news and notes that came out of that. And then a little bits of news from around the NFL that impact the Chiefs one way or another. But again, I just want to make sure, in case you missed it the first time I said it, you guys aren't all on the same page with Alex Smith. Be nice to each other. We're on the same team. Let's kick this off now with some talk about the OTAs, what the Chiefs have done so far. They have 3 days of OTAs. They came and went. They have two more sessions throughout the next 2 weeks. BJ Kissel put together roundups for all 3 days of OTAs on kcchiefs.com. You can read those there in full, but I'm going to use them to sort of brush over the main points here. So for the first day of practice, which was on Tuesday, there were several players not there. The biggest name, obviously, is Justin Houston. We haven't heard anything new with his contract situation. There's no live contact, as Kissel points out, but the team went 7-on-7, 9-on-7, and 11-on-11 in drills. The most important or impactful thing that can happen in those sort of drills, any time before pads are put on, frankly, probably any time before the season begins, is any big injuries. How the Jaguars lost their third overall pick in the first round, Dante Fowler, in the first day of rookie minicamps. There's thankfully nothing like that to report for the Chiefs through camp so far, which we should all be thankful for. We saw Derek Johnson, Mike DeVito, Sanders Cummings, Desmond Moses, Cyrus Gray, Mike Catapano, and Jeff Allen come back for the first time since they were placed on IR. Derek Johnson talked about how he and Mike DeVito had some sort of a chemistry coming back from their injuries throughout the season and offseason last year. And those are guys that I know I've talked about already. But if you want to look at if you want to project the comeback player of the year candidate from the Chiefs, obviously Derek Johnson is the big favorite and the guy you expect the most from, even though the Chiefs drafted two young inside linebackers, paid Josh Malga. They've built depth in the middle, and again, Derek Johnson, as everyone is getting older, but Derek Johnson's on the shorter side of his career at this point. But you still expect DJ to come back with a year of fresh legs after this injury to come back and be very impactful. However, I think we need to keep an eye on what Mike DeVito does. Also, Mike Catapano. Both of those guys at the defensive end position can really make an impact, because that's a place where, other than Alan Bailey, who cannot play every single snap, but other than Alan Bailey, the other defensive end spot really is a pretty large question mark. You can talk yourself into the guys that are currently there, but I think the Chiefs need to see one of these guys really step up, or see a couple of them step up on some level to where you can be rotating them and keeping them fresh and explosive all the time. Kissel writes, "One of the most interesting storylines to follow throughout the offseason will be the continuity developed between Smith and Macklin. On Tuesday, Smith, Macklin, and company spent quite a bit of time working on routes and timing in the passing game." I'm not going to go into the Alex Smith discussion right now. Don't worry about it. Don't skip ahead if you're tired of it. Don't rewind and get prepared. The big Alex Smith discussion will be later. In this case, receivers and quarterbacks, especially the quarterback to new receivers, Jeremy Macklin and Chris Conley, above and beyond anyone else, that's what these camps are meant for. Now, it's different whenever you're playing with pads. It's different whenever you have a defender in your face, knocking off your timing when you're being rushed as the quarterback, when the receiver's being knocked around. Everything changes whenever you actually get on the field and actually have an opponent. I feel like everyone understands that. However, getting that preliminary amount of chemistry and timing, that sense of timing for your receivers put together in camps like this, is a big deal. Now, if Macklin wasn't at these OTAs, would it be the end of the world? No, absolutely not. He's extremely talented. He and Smith are going to work it out. But a first year in an Andy Reid system is difficult. Obviously, with Macklin, it's not. Obviously, being a part of Reid's system back in Philadelphia. For Conley, it's the first year in this system. But it is Macklin's first year with Alex Smith. This chemistry is going to be a big deal. If this Chiefs offense is going to succeed, which I have argued it will, it's gonna ride on several levels on Alex Smith, on Jeremy Macklin, in some way on Chris Conley, and the rapport that they can all build together. So that is what to look for before they actually are putting on pads, because that's what you can practice right now. is that timing. Also, a nice, vaguely related stat from Pro Football Focus. Last year, Jeremy Maclin had the best drop rate among qualifying wide receivers. He had one drop in 140 targets. I might have even mentioned that on a previous show. I don't know, but it's so nice to hear that. To have a guy come in where you think, when you think about Jeremy Maclin, you think speed, injury risk, probably an okay route runner. You never really think about his hands because he's got the speed and the explosiveness and he can stretch the field. Obviously, according to that stat, his hands are one of the biggest strengths of his game, which is great if you're a receiver. But it's something that just doesn't get talked about very much for Jeremy Maclin, at least not whenever I hear conversation about him. I hear about his explosiveness, his ability to stretch the field, which is big and will be helpful. But Donnie Avery could stretch the field, and he had more drops than that, I think, just in the playoffs. Day two of OTAs wasn't particularly noteworthy in the news department, although Kissel put together a bunch of vines of linebackers, Chiefs linebackers, going through their positional drills. You see Josh Malga throw a sled. Great to see Derek Johnson moving the way he was moving with some of the sliding drills. And then, Dee Ford and Ramique Wilson, two guys we've talked about their speed a lot. Obviously, second year Dee Ford, first year for Ramique Wilson. Seeing their speed and agility, it's a reminder of the fact that these are all freak athletes, and there's some other factor involved that makes a guy like Tamba Hali a really elite player. It's just something that's interesting to kind of keep an eye on and to think about. You know, what's that difference? Is it a work ethic thing? Is it in the head? Obviously, some guys have incredible physical talent. If you look over to the basketball side of the world, like you look at LeBron James, he's just bigger and better than everybody else. But when you look at linebackers, a lot of these guys have very comparable physical tools, but the experience and football IQ of a guy like Tamba Hali or Justin Houston, who was not at OTAs, like I said earlier, and it just pushes those guys to a different level. While day two of Chiefs OTAs brought no particular news, day three made up for it on a couple different levels. The biggest news of the day was originally first, I believe, tweeted by Adam Teicher, who said, "Interesting development at Chiefs practice. Eric Fisher was working with the second team. Stevenson was starting left tackle." Now, I think there are two ways to look at it, and I actually heard both of them from the same man on the radio today. I started an internship at 810 WHB, local sports radio station here in Kansas City. And today on Kevin Keatsman's show, Between the Lines, Stan Weber, one of his frequent guests, was on, and this issue came up. And his first point was, you can look at this in a very positive way. You can look at it and say, this does mean something. This is a meaningful development. And it's a sign that Andy Reid and John Dorsey aren't too proud to admit they screwed up with Eric Fisher. That they believe that if Donald Stevenson takes the job and proves to be the better player by the end of it, that they would start Donald Stevenson at left tackle and let Eric Fisher become a backup for the first time in his career. And if you look at it with that in mind, and you want to believe that it's a true open competition for the left tackle position, I have no problem with that. I think that's a good thing if that's truly what's going on. However, he then went on to say that Chiefs fans have known since halfway through Fisher's rookie season that he would not develop into a top-tier left tackle, that he has no superstar potential anymore. He said that he's not giving up on him as a player, but he is essentially saying there's no chance. Keatsman threw out the idea of him being Mike Moustakas, where eventually it just clicks for him and he takes a big jump. So I was sitting there listening to this. I wanted to yell about the Tyron Smith comparison that I've made over and over and over and over on this show, where Tyron Smith last year was a Pro Bowler with the Dallas Cowboys on the best offensive line in football, probably the best player on the best offensive line in football, who was in his third year when this happened. He came in as a rookie, played right tackle, wasn't anything particularly special, but got moved to left tackle because he was a high pick. His first year at left tackle was described by Pro Football Talk or Pro Football Focus as quote-unquote awkward on an offensive line, they wrote, that the Cowboys spent a lot of money on. In Eric Fisher's case, the opposite is true. In Fisher's first year at left tackle, he was playing next to Mike McGlinn. You cannot put a first-year left tackle in a worse position than that. Whenever you're the only thing on the left side of the line that's not constantly spinning, and trust me, I understand, Fisher was doing plenty of spinning on his own. I don't think that Eric Fisher is going to be a perennial All-Pro. I don't. However, I think he's going to take a big step this year with Ben Grubbs beside him, a real NFL offensive lineman, and a second year at left tackle. That's where a lot of growth comes in the NFL. And we just saw it happen with one of the best linemen in the game. It's really aggravating to me that comparison doesn't get traction on a wider scale. Anyway, I do think it's good that there's open competition. They're not calling it open competition. I do think it's good that there's the appearance of competition there. And I think it's good that the Chiefs are giving Donald Stevenson a fair shake. If you look at what Donald Stevenson can do and did do last year and compare the two, what we've seen him do at the ceiling and how little action he got last year on a real crappy offensive line, I think it's good that he's going to get it. He's going to get work in, presumably, at both tackle positions. I would like to see him earn the right tackle position as a starter day one. But if he doesn't, if that goes essentially anywhere else, then he needs to be able to play the left side, because there's just as good of a chance that Eric Fisher gets hurt as whoever plays on the right side. There might be just as good of a chance that Eric Fisher is bad as whoever plays on the right side. I would be disappointed if Eric Fisher doesn't start day one for the Chiefs this year, because I want to see him actually develop and get a chance to. I think this is the biggest year. Obviously, it's the biggest year of Fisher's career, but I think this could be the biggest year in his career if you're looking back on his career whenever it's over. You can look back and go, oh yeah, year three, that's when he took a big jump. Or you can look back and go, oh yeah, year three, where he stalled and everyone lost any faith in him whatsoever. It's a big year for Eric Fisher. I'm not reading into the fact that Donald Stevenson's getting work at left tackle. He needs to get work at left tackle if he's going to be serving double duty as the backup left tackle and the backup right tackle. Let logic play into this here. It'll take you to the light. Trez Paylor tweeted that day three of OTAs was also a big day for the defensive backs, with at least 5 interceptions and multiple deflections. Now, OTAs and scrimmages and everything put fans in a difficult position, because I don't know if I should be happy about that or not. I don't know if that means that Alex Smith and the receivers had their timing off all day, or if Alex Smith is bad, which we'll talk about in a little bit, or if that means that the defensive backs are just really, really good, and you know, we should praise and pay Sean Smith, which we'll talk about in a little bit. Herbie Teope, one of the Chiefs beat writers for the Star, said that Smith had 2 interceptions off Smith, one right in front of his fellow defensive backs on the sidelines, which caused hooping and hollering on the field. And Teicher also reported, going back to the offensive line, the Chiefs are shuffling offensive linemen on a daily basis. Through 3 practices, only Ben Grubbs at left guard and Eric Cush at center have been constants at their positions. And Eric Cush is a guy, so far, constant at his position, because he's not particularly versatile from what we know. He couldn't get any playing time at guard last year, again with Mike McGlinn in the conversation. But Eric Cush might not be on the team day one. Eric Cush might be playing for someone else. But Grubbs is locked in at left guard. We know that. We've expected that since they made the trade. We're going to continue to expect that unless anything crazy happens. That's just where it is now. Arrowhead Pride tweeted about Stevenson at left tackle. Stevenson started 7 games in 2013 as a swing tackle. Injuries happen. This is the exact point that I'm seeing with this idea of him playing the left side some. If Donald Stevenson is even the best tackle on this team, he should play right tackle. Fisher has a ceiling that we don't know if he's met yet. I would not, absolutely not, put Stevenson at left tackle and move Fisher back to the right side. That's going to stunt Fisher's growth even more than just moving from right to left did. So there's a recap of the OTAs, the first round of them at least. Next week I'll do something similar, looking back on the next round of OTAs. Keep rooting for no injuries, and I'll keep talking about whatever comes up. If there's anything specific you'd like to hear about from the OTAs, let me know what it is, and I'll get to it. Now let's get around to some news, Chiefs and otherwise. The biggest news of the week, probably anywhere in the NFL, is that Broncos left tackle Ryan Clady injured his knee and is out for the season. This is a huge blow to the Broncos. They've now actually signed Ryan Harris, who started all 16 games at right tackle for the Chiefs last year, to a 1-year deal. But Clady going to the IR is a tremendous blow to the Broncos. The Broncos' biggest issue going into the season already had been the offensive line, and their number one priority is keeping Peyton Manning standing upright. We saw what happened when Manning really got beaten around throughout last season. When he got hurt by the second half of the year, the Broncos were still a very good team, but Manning was visibly beaten down. We heard about his thigh injury, and he played a poorer game. If he gets beaten around that much again this year, I think we'll see a very similar ultimate result. And like I said, the issue for the Broncos before this injury, before they lost Clady, the biggest issue was their offensive line. So this really adds to it, and I mean, it's always, I think, sad on some level whenever a player gets hurt even before the season begins. But just strictly looking on the field, this is a huge advantage for the Chiefs whenever they play. I mean, maybe they actually are planning on playing Ryan Harris. Maybe they'll move the Broncos move the right tackle to left and put Harris in at right. And Ryan Harris is serviceable. In fact, I thought that there's a good chance that Ryan Harris would be the Chiefs starting right tackle again this year. But back to Clady, though, he's played for five seasons, or this was his through the past 5 years, according here to an article from 9news.com, a Colorado NBC affiliate. They write, it's the third major injury Clady has suffered in the past 5 years. The Broncos' first-round draft choice, number 12 overall, in 2008, Clady has twice been named to the league's All-Pro team. So in 5 years, he's been an All-Pro twice and had three major injuries. Imagine what happens when the Chiefs play the Broncos now. You're going to have no Ryan Clady. You're going to have Tom Bahaly or Dee Ford lining up on Ryan Harris and Justin Houston lining up on whoever else the Broncos are going to start on that offensive line, plus the push in the middle. The Chiefs are going to have a really good chance to unseat the Broncos here. And really, I think it'd be very hard to understate the loss of Clady and how important that is. He's an elite, top-level left tackle. To not have that guy protecting Peyton's blindside is a huge, huge deal. Chiefs-specific news here. The Chiefs named Chris Ballard, the director of player personnel, to the team's director of football operations. His name was thrown around a lot for general managing openings, I think over the past 2 years, but especially this most recent one. This is just another step in Ballard moving up throughout the football world. I would assume he's probably gone after this season to take on a GM job somewhere, but if the Chiefs, I mean, whatever they need to do to keep Ballard, it seems like he's highly desired, so I'm all in favor of keeping him around as much as possible. As I said earlier, there is no Justin Houston news, so I'm now reporting that Justin Houston is not currently signed on the Chiefs, and Adrian Peterson has indicated that he's not going to show up at OTAs and does not want to play for the Broncos. But Ian Rappaport tweeted that another player who is in that same boat is Pro Bowl safety Eric Weddle from the Chargers. He wants an extension. He's not at OTAs, apparently, according to Rappaport at Rapsheet on Twitter. It's another thing to take note of. Weddle will show up just as Justin Houston will. But that's a situation to keep an eye on as Chiefs fans. Less Eric Weddle is a good thing if you're Kansas City. And now it's time. We're going to move on to the Smiths section of this podcast. All right, I want to start with Sean Smith. I suppose the less polarizing of the two. So in the comments of the last episode, we were having some discussion about the future of Sean Smith, his contract. I've said for a while that I think Smith will not be a Chief in 2016. RL Smitty 72 in the comments brought this to the table, said all the schmexperts seem to think Sean Smith will somehow not be a Chief after this 2015 season. I dare them to give a single good reason. He's already making $7.75 million this year, so it's not a case where Chiefs need to find additional cap room to resign him. Simply give him what he's already earning. That's just not how it's going to work. Area then responded, Revis, Peterson, and Sherman are all right at $14 million. Joe Hayden is at $13.5 million. Sean Smith is going to be in that general area. Area continued and wrote, more than likely, if Smith can have another banner year and solidify his top five or better ranking, which is where Pro Football Focus had him, he'll be looking at $12 million at least for 2016. I agree with him also where he says the Chiefs can afford it, but I don't think they're, personally, now to me, I don't think they are going to want to spend that money on a 28-year-old corner when they have Peters, Nelson, Grimes brought in, and you already also have, obviously have Phil Gaines, who I think is a very important asset here. You set up Marcus Peters and Phil Gaines to be your 1-2 guys, and Nelson as your slot essentially. Now you do need to have more depth, so some of these bottom of the roster guys would need to continue to step up, and they would probably need to draft a couple more in the next couple of years, I would say. So I would love to see Sean Smith stick around, and I'll talk a little bit about his season last year, what I expect from him this year, but there's no chance that he's going to make $7.75 million after this season if he plays anything like he did last year. Andy in the comments says, from what I've seen of Dorsey, he pays, or overpays, by position more than by player. Wide receiver and corner, he'll pay. Center, he won't. Corner, he writes, I think he puts a lot of effort, importance, to stock the position. We'll see if he pays the position as well. Here's something that I pointed out that I think we got to remember. The Chiefs reportedly were interested in Darrelle Revis this offseason. Now, that was before the draft, so they went with Peters instead. So would they have gone elsewhere other than Marcus Peters in the first round if they had Darrelle Revis? I would assume so, yes. But I don't think John Dorsey is at all afraid to pay a cornerback. I mean, we're not going to return to the days of Stanford route here if anybody can help that. So the setup with the secondary right now, I'm very, very happy with. The safety position is in great shape, I think, as well, even without Eric Berry, with him being uncertain. Right now, Sean Smith is the 16th highest-paid corner in the league, according to OverTheCap.com, and he was dominant last year. He was a top-five corner. Pro Football Focus had him as their second-team All-Pro team, and I believe he was generally ranked about fifth, I think, from Pro Football Focus as well. The numbers are hard to track when you look at numbers for corners, but ESPN has passes defended as a category. And last year, it went Bradley Fletcher from Philly, number one, Joe Hayden, number two, Vontae Davis, number three, and Sean Smith was tied for number four. He had 18 passes defended, and he was not getting targeted very frequently either. He only had one interception, which is okay if you're breaking up every pass, you're not being targeted very much. I mean, that's why there are some elite corners who don't have that many passes defended, usually because corners or quarterbacks try to challenge a corner who they think they can beat, and then the corner makes a play, that's when you get a pass defended. In Smith's case, he was defending it whenever the quarterback had to throw it at him. And yeah, he was second-team All-Pro for Pro Football Focus's defensive squad for last year. Sean Smith is a big asset, but he's also 28. He's probably going to miss at least the first game of the year due to a suspension, possibly the first two. And the Chiefs keep building a younger core with the cornerbacks and the secondary as a whole. I think this discussion is great. I think there's a lot to look at here, and there's a lot of wiggle room. But remember, I don't think John Dorsey is at all scared to pay corners, again, with the Revis thing. And if Smith has another, even a top 10 season, and the Chiefs might not think he's worth the Joe Hayden, Darrelle Revis, Richard Sherman kind of deal. The Chiefs don't have to. If Sean Smith hits free agency, only one team needs to think he's worth $14 million. And if he's 28 or 29 or whatever he'll be after this year, and he has back-to-back top 5, top 10 seasons, there's going to be a team who's looking for him to be their number one corner and to step in, and it'll absolutely be worth $15 million to a team like, I don't know, the Jaguars, who you would pair with a young defense and try to really solidify, to really lock down, you know, the opposing number one receiver every single week. Someone mentioned, and I'm sorry, I can't find where the actual comment is and or who said it, so I apologize for that. But someone said, you know, let him play out this year, and then at week 15 or 16 or 17, give him the deal he wants if he performs well. The issue with that is, frankly, that's also not going to happen. If Sean Smith has another Pro Bowl-level year or even a fringe All-Pro year, and he doesn't have a new deal at week 15, he's not signing with the Chiefs, although maybe you could say you could talk about franchising him. If Justin Houston is under contract by that point, which is obviously no guarantee whatsoever. But I guess, say the Chiefs extend Justin Houston and you want to risk franchising Sean Smith, you could talk me into that if you could work the money around, but the idea of him signing a deal in week 15, 16, or 17 after a great season is not going to happen. If he gets that far, there's very little risk for him anymore. I mean, the chances of him blowing out his ACL or whatever with two or three games less is obviously way lower than what it is at the beginning of this season. And so the Chiefs can't wait to bet on that, because if he's having that great of a year by the end of the season, he's going to say, no thanks, I'll hit free agency, and I will jack my price up with open bidding. People are going to want his services. There's no secret to that. So the Chiefs, I think, are going to have to pay him probably by week 10, at the latest, I would say, probably earlier than that, if they're going to extend him during the season. I wouldn't have a huge problem extending him before the season to something like a 3 or 4 year deal, but he might be looking for 4 to 5 and bigger money than the Chiefs want to give. And if that's the case, I think the Chiefs are building a secondary that they really are a big fan of here. Again, with Peters and Gaines on the outside, you just have to build depth elsewhere. I think the Chiefs can do that. However, the idea that they could keep paying him what he's getting paid now, or that they could sign him at the end of the year, is just not going to happen. Now, the conversation I'd like to see sort of spread from this episode here is he worth $14 million to you? Is he worth the kind of guaranteed money that Darrell Revis is older than Tron Smith is? Is he worth a Darrell Revis contract as a younger guy who doesn't have the track record of Darrell Revis, but say he has a good... Don't even project into this season. As of right now, what would you do with Sean Smith? Personally, I think I'd let him play out this year. I'd put all my chips into re-signing Justin Houston, try to open up the franchise opportunity, which would be very expensive, I understand, but try to open the franchise opportunity for Sean Smith next year. Or if his suspension becomes an issue, if any other off-the-field issues pop up like that, or if he just doesn't perform as well and you want to embrace the young secondary you have, then you let him go. But keep in mind, last year he was really the keystone of the best pass defense in the league, although obviously that's partially because the Chiefs' run defense was so bad. But he was the keystone of the statistically the best pass defense in the league, who was very good just by looking at them on tape. And you add him with the secondary talent the Chiefs have brought in now, it's a really scary, scary good secondary that the Chiefs are building there with a good front seven. I'm totally happy to invest in pass rushers and corners as long as the value is there and the production is there. But we just don't know if it's going to be there with Sean Smith, and that's why this is all so difficult. I'm sorry if you're tired of hearing about Alex Smith and indulging this debate, but it's the off season. It's the most important position on the field, and Alex Smith, similar to Eric Fisher, has a lot to prove for in his third year in this system. The top comment from last week's episode comes from Travis Crouch, who talks about how Alex Smith has had the same offense twice in his career, and not having to learn a new offense in these seasons. And that's when he took the Niners to the NFC Championship game, when the Niners beat the Saints, and they ended up losing to the Giants in the NFC Championship game itself, based off of those fumbles by the punt returner. And Travis points out, Vernon Davis was basically the only real threat on that offense. And I think that's a pretty valid point. You look at the weapons, and so here, let me go ahead and cut to what I think basically on Alex Smith for this year that maybe I didn't articulate very well in last week's episode. Maybe just people just didn't listen. I don't know. It doesn't really matter. The biggest point, I think, that I'm trying to make on Alex Smith for this year is he's a mid-level quarterback. I'm going to talk about some of the other claims that he's had here in just a second. But in my opinion, he's a mid-level quarterback. I don't hate him as the quarterback. He's not Geno Smith to me. He's not some tragedy behind center. And he's, spoiler alert, not Aaron Rodgers. And that's okay. He's going to have his best offensive line and his best weapons by miles in both cases. By miles, his best weapons and best offensive line with this Andy Reid system. In his third year of this Andy Reid system, this year needs to be a big step for Alex Smith. I'm not saying definitively that it absolutely is going to be and that it's flawless and that Alex Smith is God among men and surrounded by some mediocre talent, he'll make them all look even better and that he'll take the Chiefs to the Super Bowl. That's not my point. My point is, this needs to be the year where Alex Smith thrives in this system with these weapons, with this offensive line. And I personally also believe that he will. I think this team is going to be a contender because the defense is good. We know what the defense is. It's going to be better than last year. The offensive line is much better than last year. The weapons are much better than last year. Alex Smith is going to have another year in this system, and he has better weapons, so I think he's going to be better this next season. I don't know why you would bet on Smith either being the same or worse. Micah Stevenson, who is not an Alex Smith fan, I agree with him on this point, though. Says if Alex Smith is the same old Alex Smith this year, he'll be to blame. Yes, he will. If the offensive line and the weapons and stuff are healthy and Smith plays poorly, then by the end of this season, we're all going to be sitting here twiddling our thumbs going, well, either figure out if Aaron Murray can play or go get somebody else. And you know what? We should be saying that if at the end of the year, Alex Smith has stunk it all up and the Chiefs haven't done anything. That's our position as fans or people covering the team or whatever. But I don't think that's going to happen. I think Smith, and this is a criticism for Smith in a lot of cases, but in this case, I'm going to say it as a compliment. I think Smith basically will take the level of talent that he's surrounded by. Now, with the Niners in that instance of taking the Niners to the NFC Championship game with a really, really good defense and basically just Vernon Davis, he might have exceeded the talent around him on offense. But generally, I think it's safe to say that Alex Smith, basically meets the level of his talent, where guys like Andrew Luck and Aaron Rodgers make everybody look like gods, and Jamarcus Russell playing quarterback makes everybody else look like a bunch of ninth graders or something playing against an NFL team. I think Alex Smith is basically a pretty equal variable. He's going to take on the personality of the rest of this offense, and I think this offense is taking a big step forward this year. That's my general point on Alex Smith. But then there is some stuff here that I feel like we need to talk about. RLSmitty72 says he would take any quarterback. He would take Alex Smith over any quarterback under 30 other than Andrew Luck. And then I think he retracted that for the allowance of Russell Wilson. I would take Bridgewater, Matt Stafford, Matt Ryan, Russell Wilson, Andrew Luck, Cam Newton, if I didn't say that already. I think those are all, frankly, pretty easy. And also, you're really limiting yourself by saying under 30. Like, Joe Flacco was 30. I would take Joe Flacco. And Alex Smith is 31 right now, which it is surprising that he's only 1 year older than Joe Flacco. You think of Alex Smith as being around forever. But so if you want to play within Alex Smith's age bracket, I still think he's a middle-of-the-road quarterback wherever you place him. I think it's ridiculous to say you would take him over Russell Wilson or Matt Ryan. I think that's insane. I also think it's insane to say that the Chiefs ought to get rid of him. They should be rolling with Chase Daniel. People talking about Colin Kaepernick, I'm not even interested in that conversation at this point. Khalif Chiefs fan wrote that Pro Football Focus's rankings put Alex Smith at 16th overall in quarterback play, 14th overall at passing, which I think is pretty fair. Again, middle of the road. But then someone else brought the idea that wins are what really matter. That was actually also RLSmitty72. So wins are the thing that really matters, especially for quarterbacks. And I'm going to agree and disagree on that on a couple of levels here. For one, football is incredibly a team game. You can look at, again, Trent Dilfer gets bagged on all the time. I don't mean to do that. But Trent Dilfer has a Super Bowl ring. Dan Marino never did. Everybody who's an NFL fan knows and understands that. The game is more complex than saying which quarterback has the most wins. It's also more complex than saying which quarterback has the most yards or the most touchdown passes or whatever. But let's indulge this idea of wins being key here for a second. Now, of active quarterbacks, sorted by winning percentage, with a minimum of, I'm putting it at 15 starts, so it rules out like Mohamed Sanu, this rules out Drew Stanton, Dennis Dixon, with a minimum of 15 starts among active quarterbacks, Alex Smith is 18th in winning percentage. Now, if you want to look at overall wins, then he rises to 15, but that puts him ahead of Russell Wilson and puts him behind Matt Hasselbeck. So take that how you will. That's all games, regular and postseason combined. But whenever I saw this, this is based off of footballdb.com, the football database has these sorted. But whenever you say that wins are what really matter, in reality, I would say if you're going to play that game with the semantics of wins are the most important thing, which in football is the most important thing, I would argue that they're not the most important way to measure a quarterback and how good a quarterback is, because it's a team game. But say that wins are the most important way to measure a quarterback, if you're going to say that, I think the actual thing you should be saying is that playoff wins are the most important thing for a quarterback. So then again, sorted by winning percentage here quarterbacks who have more or have a higher playoff winning percentage than Alex Smith. Wilson, Manning, Brady, Roethlisberger, Flacco, Sanchez, Kaepernick, Breeze, Rodgers, Luck, Grossman, Cutler, Schaub, Yates, Manning, Hasselbeck, Rivers, Vic, Romo, Newton, Smith. That's number 21. Alex Smith has that victory we talked about earlier over the Saints in the playoffs, and then that's it. If you want to play the wins are the most important thing card, It's not great for Alex Smith basing it off of the postseason, and frankly, I think this is just another reason why this is so flawed. If Kyle Williams hadn't muffed at least two punts in the NFC Championship game, we'd be talking about how Alex Smith has a Super Bowl berth and maybe a Super Bowl victory. The NFL is a very complex game. I think it's too complex to say, look at the wins and see what matters. But even if you just look at the wins and say that's the only thing that matters, that's not good news for what we should think about Alex Smith. So I find myself, once again here, comfortably on the Alex Smith debate, somewhere in the middle. This is going to be a big year for Alex Smith. This is going to be his defining year, just like Eric Fisher. We're going to look back at both of these guys' third years with Andy Reid, and we're going to go, oh, that's the year where Alex Smith and Eric Fisher took a step forward and got this entire city behind them, or Alex Smith and Eric Fisher stalled or stepped backwards, and the Chiefs had to flip tables over, find a new left tackle, and start Aaron Murray in 2017. I think Eric Fisher is going to take a step forward. I think Alex Smith is surrounded by an offense that he is going to soak up. We know he's a smart quarterback, and when you're a smart quarterback surrounded by great weapons who can really make things happen after the catch, that's your job description, is to be smart and give the ball to those people. I think Alex Smith is going to have a good season this year. I'm by no means in the camp where of the guys who say, Alex Smith can never win a Super Bowl. He will never win a Super Bowl. It's all a fluke. It's all completely hopeless and worthless. We should have Geno Smith. We should have Teddy Bridgewater. We should have whoever the Chiefs could have had a shot at. And I'm also not going to sit here and tell you I would rather have Alex Smith than Russell Wilson, because that's insane. I think Alex Smith's going to have a good year this season. We're probably all going to talk about it for like three more months before we even get a sniff of what's actually going to happen. Welcome to the offseason, everybody. That is going to be it for this episode of the Roughing the Kicker podcast on Arrowhead Addict Radio, arrowheadaddict.com. I'm Joshua Briscoe. Going to be here every week throughout the offseason, hopefully, and then twice a week in the regular season if everything goes according to plan. Maybe I'll have a co-host again. We'll have to see how that goes. Keep commenting in these episodes. Let this be your discussion forum. If you don't have a place to take your Chiefs hot takes, lay them here. I want to hear them. I'll bring them back for the next week's episode, future episodes, and I'll respond to them with my words like this. We'll have a conversation instead of just typing with my fingers. Heck, if you want to call in sometime, maybe we can set up a Google Hangout kind of thing. We'll have like a call-in episode of the show. So I can't make that promise. That's a lot of work. As always, thank you for listening. Through an off-season episode where there's so much going on and there's nothing going on, there's so little going on that everything is happening all at once. We always have Alex Smith debates to fall back on, though, right? Everybody likes that. We can all agree there, right? Guys?
Bye, Mom! Excuse me, sir, but could you drop the bass?